Why is Christmas on December 25th? The Bible never gives a date, and every year on social media you'll hear theories like it was the birthday of the sun god Sol Invictus or Mithras. But the real story is honestly more interesting. I'm joined by Dr. Tom Schmidt, a Yale-trained scholar of early Christianity and the New Testament who's published research on the origins of Christmas. We're going to walk through all the evidence, the Roman sun god, the winter solstice, and a fascinating Greek inscription carved onto a statue of the bishop Hippolytus that helps explain how December 25th started to make sense. So with that, let's get into it. All right, I'm here with Dr. Tom Schmidt. Welcome to the show.
Andrew, it's great to be back.
So tis the season to talk about the date of Christmas. And you have a relatively recent article. I say relatively recent. It was 2015, I believe. So in the grand scheme of academia, that's recent. Article on the date of Christmas, December 25th. Why is it on December 25th? I have talked about this on the channel before, about the history of religion thesis and the calculation thesis. And I want us to walk the audience through all the arguments for why we think early Christians largely settled on December 25th. And we can get into why I use the word largely there too. So maybe start us off where you think makes the most sense.
I think maybe what makes the most sense is starting with the more certain data that we have, because in so much historical investigation, there's a lot that's squishy and unclear. So maybe we'll start with what is clear and what everybody agrees on, and then we'll go from there. What everyone agrees on is that in 386 AD, John Chrysostom is a very famous Christian figure. He's the Bishop of Antioch in 386, and he's preaching a Christmas sermon that we have, and it's on December 25th. And in it, he says, you know, folks, this date is new for us. We just started celebrating this date less than 10 years ago, he says. So that brings us back to 376. And he says, and actually this date is spreading throughout the whole Roman world right now, the Roman Empire right now. And we know that he's right about that because we get all these other Christmas sermons that come about that we still have preserved from famous figures around roughly the same time. And then John says something really interesting. He says, but we learned this date from the church in Rome, and they've been celebrating it on this date for a long time, he says. He says that several times. So that we know that in the East, in Antioch, in the Roman East, that they were celebrating Christmas in the 370s, 380s, and it was new then, and that they got it from the Romans, and the Romans were doing it even earlier. Hmm. Curiously, around the same time, in the 360s, the emperor of Rome, Julian the Apostate, he was a Christian who then reverted to paganism, Greco-Roman paganism. That's why he's called Julian the Apostate. He writes a hymn to the sun god, the god of the sun. And he mentions that there is this huge, important festival on December 25th to the sun god. Hmm. So the question becomes, what is going on here? Was Christmas chosen because it corresponded with the feast of the sun god, and in some sources, the birth of the sun god? Or was it simply coincidental? You know, these dates just happen to coincide. Or is the opposite true, that actually Julian, in trying to revive Greco-Roman paganism that had fallen on such hard times, that some pagan priest decided to co-opt Christmas celebrations? That's the big question.
Hmm. I actually did not know about that John Chrysostom quote. I'm a big fan of John Chrysostom. I study early Christian magic, and in his homilies, he complains about magic a lot, the people in his congregation using amulets and stuff like that. But we're talking 370s, 380s, so quite late. We're you know, half a century after Constantine, 350 years after Jesus, and John is like, oh, wow, this is our new date, December 25th. But which kind of tells us something about kind of the wild, wild west of early Christianity, where something that we take for granted, oh, Christmas is on December 25th, even a big name bishop in a major city like Antioch, the date wasn't settled yet.
Precisely. Yeah. And we see that it's not just John that tells us this. We know from many sources that the date was not settled. It took a long time to get settled. We have some naysayers, you know, people who argue against it. And another big running date was January 6th. And that's still held in the Armenian church today. And There were other dates too. When you go back and you start rooting through the records, you know, some people said November, March 28th was a date. Also, March 25th seems to have been a date. December 25th, of course, was a date. So there was a variety of possibilities, and December 25th was one of them, and that's the one that won out.
So let's start dialing back in time, trying to get earlier. So where did John get this this idea? And maybe focus first on the sun god, because you just brought up the sun god. There was, apparently, we have the scrap of evidence that there was some sort of sun god festival on December 25th. This leads us to the so-called history of religion thesis, that there must have been some sort of major festival on December 25th. Christian authorities, I think there's like a lazy, you know, Twitter meme way that it goes, which is, oh, they wanted to steal the holiday or to somehow Christianize it. You can make a more academic argument and say there's some process of Christianization where people were already celebrating it. Why not put a Christian label on it? And this theory, from my understanding, has fallen out of favor in recent years. Can you walk us through the history of religion thesis, Sol Invictus, sun god, and where that scholarship stands now?
You have correctly summarized it. The thesis is roughly that there was this Roman, the city of Rome, had a celebration to the sun god, the birth of the sun god on December 25th, and had games associated with that, chariot races, things like that. And that this was a big deal, and that Christians liked it, and they thought, well, we'll celebrate the birth of our Son of God, you know, S-O-N as opposed to S-U-N, and we'll do that on December 25th. And this actually was the majority position of scholars for quite some time, where going back to the 19th century, where that originally December 25th was this pagan holiday that the church, in whatever process and for whatever reasons, co-opted. And it was easy for them to do that because if you read the New Testament and the Old Testament, Jesus is associated with bringing light into the world. And in fact, there's even a prophecy in the prophet Malachi who talks about the Son of Righteousness, S-U-N, the Son of Righteousness will arise, that was viewed as a messianic prophecy of Jesus. So it was easy for them to make the argument that maybe our light of the world began to dawn on December 25th, and we'll just replace this other holiday. The problem with this is that we actually have very little evidence of a Roman festival on December 25th to the sun god. There's a reason why Julian the Apostate is our earliest piece of evidence from the 360s, because we know lots and lots about Roman religion. We have many sources that talk about that. We actually have Roman religious calendars that are preserved, and none of them mention a date of the birth of the sun god on December 25th. The closest we can come before Julian is a manuscript called the Chronography of 354 AD. So this is not much before Julian. Julian's in the 360s. This is the 350s.
Yeah, and only 20 or so years before John Chrysostom too. So this is also quite late. After Constantine, yeah.
And it says the birth of Invictus was on December 25th, but it doesn't say the sun. Now, often the sun god was called Sol Invictus, the unconquered sun. Invictus means unconquered. Most scholars have read this passage as referring to the sun god being born on December 25th. But either way, I mean, that only gets us back to the 350s, 330s. So most scholars think what's going on here is that Emperor Aurelian in the 270s, he was a worshiper of the sun god. He founded a temple of the sun in Rome in 274 AD. And there's some good, it's circumstantial, but there is some good reasons to believe that he started a date of a feast to the sun god, a celebration of the sun god on December 25th in 274 AD. And now, even with that date, though, you know, you can still make that history of religion's argument that this then became a very popular feast, and the church, in some sense, used it or borrowed from it or what have you. That, though, gets us into the alternative theory, the calculation theory.
Yeah, and before we dive into that, I do want to give the history of religion theory its fair shake. I think I was a little flippant. Just because it's the memes that pop up every single year. You know, TikTok is just awash with people saying Christianity is stealing pagan this and that. And, you know, I study syncretism. So, like, I do understand when Christianity, Judaism, all religions are building their religions out of the available culture. I think it's Gregory. There's some Western bishop in, like, the 600s who does outright say, like, let's Christianize temples, let's Christianize holidays. Like, we do have, like, actual bishops saying that. But when it comes to soul... It's Gregory. Okay, yeah. I did do a video on Sol Invictus, so I feel like I have a decent grasp on this scholarship. And from my understanding, Sol was a relatively minor god in the earlier centuries of the Roman Republic and then the early Roman Empire. And then Aurelian, really, the sun god has his moment from 270 into the 300s. Constantine himself apparently was a sun god fan. So the argument that, just to repeat what you were saying, the argument is that a December 25th sun god festival doesn't seem to be particularly ancient, seems to be late 3rd century, and by no means was a major holiday, so major that Christians everywhere, Christian authorities everywhere would be like, oh my word, we need to Christianize this ASAP, otherwise, you know, to get these pagans in line. It could not have been viewed as a threat because it was recent and not particularly major.
I agree. Another factor is just the fact of us as humans. We all live on this earth. We all look at the sun and the moon. Before the internet, before TV, we're doing that all the time, constantly. We're very aware of the patterns and the phases of the moon and of the sun and how the sun will, in the northern hemisphere, will stay out longer and get higher in the sky in the summer and the opposite in winter. And it's a natural human reaction to see to realize when the winter solstice occurs, that the sun is now out longer. We see this across all cultures. We see it in Jewish culture. We see it in Christian culture. We see it in basically every culture we have evidence of. So another factor, complicating factor in this, is that it's just very possible that people are noticing the same thing and independently marking these dates in parallel. And we know that, for instance, Jews did do this. The vernal equinox was important for Jews. It was important for Christians. And if the vernal equinox is important, the spring equinox, then the solstices and the autumnal equinox are also important.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think lends... explain somewhat why the history of religion theory was so popular, because the solstice and the vernal equinox do seem to be part of the story here. So we can't, the argument to refute the history of religion thesis is somewhat nuanced. We have to say, yes, the solstice had something to do with it. No, Sol Invictus probably didn't have anything to do with it. So it is nuanced. So with that, now that we're talking about solstices and vernal equinoxes, I think now is a good time to walk our way into the calculation theory, which I think will require some laying the foundations to wrap our heads around this argument.
Yeah, the calculation theory brings us to just another thought world. It's this world of ancient Christian chronographers. These are ancient Christians who are trying to figure out when biblical events occurred, like the crucifixion of Jesus, like the resurrection of Jesus, like other points in the biblical past, and of course, like the birth of Jesus. And we see this starting in the second and third centuries, where Christians are doing this. And in order to figure out the most important dates in the Christian calendar, which is the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus, you have to be able to figure out the Passover. The Passover is a Jewish holiday, and it's a lunar holiday. It's calibrated to the phases of the moon. And you are, according to biblical instructions and Jewish Talmudic documents, you're supposed to celebrate the Passover on the first full moon after the vernal equinox. Now, this brings up two problems for chronographers. Number one is, when is the vernal equinox? It's actually hard. I mean, we can make a random guess and say towards the end of March, but it's actually very difficult to figure out precisely when the vernal equinox is. And then the Passover, on a year-to-year basis, it's easy to go out and look up at the sky and see if the moon is full or not. But what's very difficult is to predict when a full moon would have occurred in the past. it's technically possible, but it's very hard to do because the moon moves around a little bit and it's inconsistent and it runs throughout the solar calendar. So if you keep track of when Passover or Easter occur every year, you notice it moves, those dates move in the calendar, and sometimes they're a month apart from one year to another. So that's important because in order to figure out the crucifixion of Jesus, you need to know all of this stuff going on. Otherwise, you're going to land on the wrong date. And to bring this full circle to the birth of Jesus, it turns out that early Christians thought, for a variety of reasons, they thought that Jesus was conceived on the Passover. So they thought he was arrested and crucified on the Passover. They also thought he was conceived on the Passover. And of course, if you're conceived at some point, if you know when someone is conceived, you can at least get a rough estimate of when they are born.
Yeah. So let's dial back a little bit. So let's imagine it's the first few centuries of Christianity. You have these extremely erudite, extremely smart early Christian theologians who set out on a mission to try to calculate the major milestones of the life of Jesus. The Gospels give us a lot of data on a lot of things. They don't mention times and dates very often. They don't mention when Jesus was born, but we do get some details about when he was crucified, so around the Passover. So the Passover changes year to year because of the phases of the moon, so it's shifting between April and March. So that presents a problem for these chronographers. Let's say 200-something CE, 300-something CE, they're hundreds of years after the crucifixion of Jesus, and so they're trying to backdate. They're like calculating back literally centuries. When was the full moon? Sometime around 30 CE when they think Jesus was crucified. So that's the problem they're trying to crack here, right?
Yes, and the problem is actually compounded also because if you follow the gospel accounts, Jesus is crucified on a Friday. So this full moon also has to correspond with a day of the week, which just adds another layer of complications.
Yeah. I mean, hats off to them for attempting it, but you can see the problem they have here. It's a calendrical problem. It's an astronomical problem. They're trying to calculate moon phases with the dates. So this is the mission that's in front of them. And let's now get into, you briefly gestured at this, what this has to do with the birth of Jesus. We're talking a lot about the crucifixion of Jesus here. Why does the birth of Jesus have anything to do with this? And you mentioned that they believe the conception of Jesus happened around March or the same Passover era time that he was crucified.
Early Christians, collectively, it's not totally universal, but it's a majority position, almost universal. They seem to have believed that Jesus was conceived either on the Passover or the vernal equinox or both, because occasionally those dates match. And why they believe this is another question. They give various reasons for this that we could get into. But one of them is that they really liked the idea of sort of the life of Jesus being matched with when they thought God created the universe. There's another universal belief that they thought God created the universe on the vernal equinox. You know, if you believe that God spoke into being everything at once, then you need to select a day that this happened. And not all Christians believed this is how God created the universe, but some ancient Christians did. And so if you're going to select a day, you have to select a phase of the moon, you have to select what day, and of course, you know, they're looking at options, and they think the vernal equinox is the best one, because that's a perfect balance of light and darkness, everything, and the, you know, it matches.
Cosmic perfection for the savior of the universe. So let's get some names to this. Let's get some hard data. We've mentioned early Christians say this and that. Do we have any specific quotes or scholar or early Christian theologians who specifically say this about conception happening on the Passover, on the vernal equinox?
Yes. Yeah. Our earliest source for this is an apocryphal text, you know, the Infancy Gospel of James and the Proto-Evangelion of James that seems to suggest that the conception happened on the Passover. It's not totally explicit, but this is a second century document. We have other statements by other Christians that are explicit. And in fact, one of them comes from 222 AD, and it comes from this wonderful, beautiful inscription, Christian inscription, on a statue of a seated figure that is now found at the entryway to the Apostolic Library in the Vatican. And for the benefit of your viewers, as opposed to your listeners, I'll bring up a picture of this.
Great. So maybe for the listeners, describe what we're looking at.
We are looking at a beautiful marble life-size seated figure on a chair, on a throne, really, that has mini lion heads on either side of the armrests. And on the side of the throne is inscribed a set of lengthy inscriptions. And the inscriptions are difficult to read, but when you zoom in person, I have seen this statue in person. And when you look at it, the inscriptions are fairly clear as far as inscriptions go. And it turns out that what this inscription is of is a Passover calendar. It's a calendar designed to try and figure out when previous Passovers occurred so that the author of the calendar could figure out when certain biblical events occurred. And the author of the calendar is a guy named Hippolytus of Rome, and the calendar dates to 222 AD.
So I mentioned this in one of my videos. I use the analogy of an Excel spreadsheet. You can kind of imagine Hippolytus has, I mean, you're more familiar with it, but he's basically trying to figure out lunar phases like 150 years before his time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He's trying to figure out when the Passover happened almost 200 years previously. And in fact, he goes even farther back. He's trying to figure out when Passovers involving Moses happened. So he's going more than 1,000 years backwards in time. And explaining how this, here, I'll bring up another image. This is a transcription, so it's much easier to read. It's a transcription of that side of the chair. It's all in Greek letters. The Greeks used alphabetic characters to indicate numbers. So this is a calendar. It's a quite a complicated calendar. What's interesting for our purposes is it's trying to predict when various Passovers are, and when it comes across a Passover that the author Hippolytus believes corresponds with a certain very important event in Judeo-Christian history, he marks it with a note. And if we zoom in right here, there is a note right here that in Greek says the genesis of Christ. And he uses an abbreviation for Christ. That's the superlinear stroke that indicates that's an abbreviation. The genesis of Christ, in other words, the beginning or the coming to be of Christ. And he thinks this occurred on the Passover of 2 BC. In our calendar, we would say the Passover of 2 BC, April 2nd. And that's interesting, because whatever he means by Genesis, he thinks that either, you know, the birth of Christ happened on the Passover, April 2nd, or it can also be interpreted as the conception of Jesus happened on the Passover. It all depends on how we interpret that Greek word. It's the same word for the book of Genesis, you know, the beginning or the coming to be. And in my article that I wrote, I show that in contemporary Greek medical literature that was written in the 200s, the word genesis of a person refers to their conception. And so it seems like this is what Hippolytus is doing. He thinks Jesus was conceived on the Passover of April 2nd. And logically then he must have believed that Jesus was born sometime 9 months later. And of course, sometime 9 months later from April 2nd is around December 25th. If it's an exact 9 months, it's January 2nd.
So let's circle back now to John Chrysostom, and we can take the calendar off the full screen. So let's circle back to the beginning of our discussion. You mentioned John Chrysostom writing in the 380s CE says, "Hey, we've just started practicing Christmas on December 25th. We got this from those Christians way over in Rome." So we're in Antioch. That's modern-day Turkey, quite far east. And then he mentions that Christians in Rome have been celebrating it on this date for a long time. And here we have data, presumably from Rome. So Hippolytus was based in Rome, right? From 222. So like this is quite early. This is like well before John Chrysostom.
Yes. And the statue was found in Rome. And Hippolytus was from Rome as well. So this is Roman data from 222 AD, like you said, of them apparently celebrating the conception of Jesus or marking. I should caution that there's no evidence there was actual ecclesiastical celebrations. This is purely a chronological exercise. But he thinks that Jesus was conceived on the Passover of April 2nd in Rome in 222 AD. That's where he documents his belief.
Okay. So now let's start moving because we're still working around the vernal equinox. We're in March, we're in April. Bring us now to December. What does Hippolytus tell us about, or what are your theories about what Hippolytus then thought about the birth of Jesus? If he thinks conception happened on April 2nd on some Passover 2 BC, when did he think Jesus was born?
Of course, that's the natural question. He writes another work that we have, and it's a commentary on Daniel. It's actually the earliest complete Christian commentary on a book of scripture that exists. And if you read this, he says Jesus is born on December 25th. The problem with this is that's only what some of the manuscripts that remain of this commentary say. There are other manuscript witnesses that don't have a date at all, or will say something else, like something involving April. It's a corrupted reading. It doesn't really make sense. You can't really read it. So scholars have always argued over this. And what did he actually believe about the birth of Jesus? It's of course possible that he didn't say anything, or he said some date other than December 25th, and some medieval scribe down the road changed things in the manuscript tradition. So scholars were at a standstill regarding what Hippolytus believed. What I noticed and what I published in my article was that he has yet another work where he is doing chronological calculations and he is talking about, you know, the creation of the world, and he thinks that this happened on March 25th. And he's doing this lengthy chronology where he's dating biblical events from creation, so from the March 25th. And he has a passage in there where he appears to say that Jesus was born 9 months after the anniversary of the creation of the world. And if he thinks, which he does seem to think, that the world was created on March 25th, the vernal equinox in the Roman calendar, then 9 months, precisely 9 months later, is December 25th. So I argue that I think he chose December 25th as the birthday of Jesus. But, you know, he did this because of juggling involving figuring out when the Passover occurred and when the world was created. He thought it was the vernal equinox. Those are his assumptions going in. In other words, this doesn't seem to be ancient Christian tradition that has passed down the birthday of Jesus to him. It also doesn't seem to be based on the birthday of Sol Invictus or the sun god or anything like that.
Yeah, let's quickly go back to that. So as we mentioned, the Sol Invictus apparently had his moment around 270 CE with Emperor Aurelian. And then we have this calendar from 354 that mentions some sort of festival on December 25th for Invictus, who scholars think is a reference to Sol Invictus. So 270 is the earliest that we could theorize if indeed Emperor Aurelian instituted some sort of major holiday to celebrate Sol Invictus on December 25th, it would be around 270. Even then, that's speculative, though. We don't have the data until 354. We're talking 222 here, though. We're well before Aurelian, well before Sol Invictus having his moment. So it seems that at least one Christian, but maybe we can unpack this more, who else was floating around this date? At least one Christian in the early 200s was starting to circle around December 25th as the birthday of Jesus because of what we would consider contrived attempts to match make cosmic perfection to the life of Jesus. You know, the universe created on the vernal equinox, Jesus conceived on, you know, Passover, then crucified on the Passover. Like, it is kind of convenient, but this is, we're trying to get into the mind of Hippolytus here.
Exactly. Hippolytus wasn't the only person doing this. We have other examples of this happening. There's an even earlier author called Clement of Alexandria. He's writing in Alexandria, Egypt, in the 190s, maybe 200, 205, something like that. So he predates Hippolytus. He also is doing chronological work, and he gives a chronology involving the life of Jesus, where you see these similar assumptions baked in, where he seems to think Jesus is conceived on the Passover and born roughly 9 months later. The difference is that he has different dates for the Passover. So his corresponding dates for the birth of Jesus also seem to be different. There's another author called Julius Africanus. He actually is writing 1 year before Hippolytus in 221. And he also could be in Rome. We know he lived in Rome for a while, but he also traveled all throughout the Mediterranean. So we don't know when he wrote his major chronographical work, if it was in Rome or not. But conceivably, he's literally in Rome hanging out with Hippolytus and they're talking about this stuff. We don't know. But he also seems to think the world was created on the vernal equinox, March 25th. And he says, it's this puzzling statement where he says the incarnation, the Greek word is sarcosis, the enfleshment of Jesus happened on March 25th. And the question is, what does he mean by this? Does he mean the birth of Jesus or the conception of Jesus? But you see, it's the same thought processes that are going on. All of these individuals might have arrived at slightly different dates, but the ingredients and the thought processes behind them all appear to be the same.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, that the ingredients are there. They're all circling the vernal equinox. There's a lot going on in March and April. Creation of the universe, possible conception of Jesus, possibly birth of Jesus, if by enfleshment he means birth, or maybe he means conception. But the fact that so much speculation and calculations were happening around these dates, it seems to be too convenient not to be the explanation that if you calculate a perfect 9 months forward, you're ending up in late December.
Exactly. And I want to also point out that we are trying to zero in on a very narrow thing. We're just asking the question of, when was December 25th first chosen as the birth of Jesus? But there's a whole nother discussion about, why did this date win out? How did it spread throughout the Roman Empire? I mean, these are all possible avenues of investigation. And this is just focusing in on, when was this date first selected and why was it first selected? And I think the answer is, it seems to have been selected in the early 200s, probably by Hippolytus, maybe by Julius Africanus, and that it was due to chronological assumptions about when God created the universe and about the Passover and the vernal equinox marking important points in Judeo-Christian tradition, but especially in the life and death of Jesus.
That's so fascinating. And for me, I mean, you mentioned possibly Hippolytus, but if we have some possible evidence that the infancy gospel of James is already floating the conception of Jesus on Passover or the vernal equinox, it seems like the ingredients for that calculation might have already existed well before Hippolytus too.
I think so. I think you can find evidence that Christians, for whatever reason, thought that Jesus was conceived on the Passover or the vernal equinox, or both, before Hippolytus. We have a lot of evidence of this. And I think that Hippolytus is inheriting this tradition, and he's just using it to try and figure out when Jesus was born, and he's making these calculations to do so.
So maybe let's transition then to, if you have theories on how this then became the dominant date and how it spread around the Mediterranean, because apparently it took decades. If the Roman Christians were already doing this in the early 200s, and the Bishop of Antioch kind of views it as a novelty in the late 300s. That's a century's worth of time for what Christians today take for granted as this, you know, of course it's December 25th. You know, Christians living around Antioch in 370 would have been like, what? Why December 25th?
It's vital to remember that when we're making these calculations, you know, not only are there a lot of assumptions baked in, but you're going to come up with different answers depending of different answers of Jesus's for Jesus's birth, depending on when you think he was conceived. And if you think it was the Passover March 25th or April 2nd or April 6th, you get different answers. And that's not even factoring into the uncertain gestational time frame. I mean, we all know there's a lot of hidden assumptions here. How this date goes from Hippolytus and how it launches into the greater church, that's a great question. It's a little bit murky. What we can say is that Hippolytus's calendar that's on the side of that statue that we talked about, it's a fascinating calendar. Unfortunately, from a chronological perspective, it's a very, very bad calendar because he is totally wrong. He writes this calendar in 222 AD, and when you look at when he thinks Passover has happened in the past and when he thinks Passover has happened in the future, he's only right for 2 or 3 years before and after 222 AD. The calendar is only correct for about 7 years. And after that, it just drifts, and it's very obvious. You don't need to be an astronomer. You just go out and you realize that's not the full moon that I'm looking at right now. Anybody can do that. So it seems like Hippolytus's calculations were sidelined, for rightly so, because they were wrong. We have some attempts at correcting them. There's a Latin author in the 240s who tries to correct them. He does a better job, but he's also wrong. And at some point, we start seeing arguments in the 300s regarding when Jesus was born. And these arguments lean on this sort of calculation hypothesis in Passover, but they also lean on this idea that I mentioned earlier, that they believe Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And they just loved that image of the light of the world becoming visible on the darkest day of the year, on the winter solstice. That image spoke to them very deeply. And we see this come up repeatedly in Christmas sermons, in other topics regarding Christmas. And I think that was the factor that made December 25th win out over other possible dates. There was this beautiful, from their perspective, profound symmetry and imagery involving this date. There's some irony here. As some of your viewers know, December 25th is not actually the winter solstice. The Romans thought it was the winter solstice. That was the official marker of it. But of course, the actual winter solstice occurs a few days earlier than December 25th. So I think what's going on is that the Roman Church ends up embracing this date, and they do it because of Hippolytus, but also because of this sort of seasonal imagery, the solar symbolism that develops with the sun beginning to get stronger, corresponding with the light of the world, Jesus coming into creation or being visible in creation. And the Roman Church loves this, and the other churches eventually join in, and it takes a while, but they eventually join in. And they didn't have to adjust things too much because many of the other churches were celebrating on January 6th, the birth of Jesus. So, you know, it was an adjustment, but it's the same season, you know, a couple weeks early.
Just to hammer this home, so you're totally right. And December 25th was not the winter solstice. And the Romans, you know, they were good enough astronomers to know that. It seems to have solidified almost as like the traditional date. I say this only, so it's mentioned in two different Roman authors, so Pliny the Elder and Columella, who are two early, you know, even earlier than Hippolytus, Roman authors who explicitly mentioned December 25th is the winter solstice. And it's unclear whether they mean like the actual date, which it wasn't, or if they mean that's like when it was marked or recognized. So there does seem to be cosmic symbolism baked into the significance of the birth of Jesus. And I think this is partially why it's so difficult to address the history of religion theory, because the solstice does seem to be part of the story. It's just, I think using terminology like, oh, Christians stole a major holiday is simplistic. I think everybody in the Roman Empire recognized this day as an important day. you know, the shortest day of the year, when this, every day after this, it's starting to get longer and longer, the sun starts shining more and more, everybody would have recognized that as a cosmically significant day. And why not attach your deity to that day?
I agree. And I also want to zoom out even more. You know, we've gone from talking about when December 25th was actually first selected and why, with Hippolytus, maybe Julius Africanus. And then we've zoomed to talk about why did the church, you know, embrace this date, the wider church embrace this date over other possible dates. But there's another question too, which is just the on the ground question of what are random everyday Christians throughout the empire doing? What are they thinking when they're told or they're deciding when to celebrate the birth of Jesus? That's a much, much harder question to answer. But clearly we do know in the fourth century, there were some pagan celebrations to the sun god on December 25th. And so it's obviously very possible that there were some people in the Roman Empire who were not Christians, who then converted to Christianity and were excited because they got to kind of just switch holidays around, that they were marking the sun god on December 25th and now they have Christmas. But I don't think, you know, if you look at the authors like John Chrysostom and some major, major figures that are writing Christmas sermons on December 25th, they don't seem to be like the kind of people who would want that to be a motive. You get that kind of attitude later on with like Pope Gregory in the 600 AD or the 580s or something. But back 200 years earlier, I don't think that's a very likely motive. But again, it's very hard to read motives in person with people you know, and we're trying to go back hundreds and hundreds of years to a culture not our own, where we have, you know, very fragmentary evidence. But it seems like the major factors were simply chronological factors plus the cosmic solar symbolism of the ebb and flow of light and dark in the world.
Yeah. And this is more speculative on my part, but my hunch is that this would have been spread via liturgy. Like, I just can't imagine your random illiterate Christian in the hinterlands of Syria would have cared much about the birth of Jesus unless they also go to a basilica and the bishop is like, oh, today we're going to celebrate the liturgy of the birth of Jesus and we're going to do it today on December 25th. Like, I could see that being a mechanism for, I'm always trying to think of mechanisms of Christianization. Like, how did this particular holiday take off? How did this particular practice take off? That's purely speculative on my part, but to have someone like John Chrysostom talking about it in a homily to people in his church strikes me as that's probably ground zero for how this spread.
I think you're right. I think there were probably letters exchanged between important bishops where they're trying to align. We know that these bishops felt this desire to try and get their celebrations to line up. We know that there was huge debates over when to celebrate Good Friday and Easter because it happens to do with the Passover, and they exchanged lots of letters about that. We don't have these letters regarding Christmas, so this is speculative, but I think that's probably what was going on. And I think you're also on point regarding, you know, a peasant in the hinterlands of Syria, that we have to remember that not only did they not have the internet and encyclopedias and things, they didn't have calendars. I mean, they wouldn't have had a calendar on their wall. And you know, they would have been very aware of the seasons, but as far as like a specific date, many people may not have been all that aware. You know, people didn't keep track of their birthdays back then frequently. And so, you know, this probably would have been ecclesiastical, and they, you know, would have, their bishop would have said, hey, we're going to celebrate the birth of Jesus in a couple weeks. And they say, okay, great, sounds good. There are, I should say that these articles, I've written two articles on this, and they're freely available. So if people really want to dig in, one of them gets very technical, but it's freely available. It's on my website. It can be downloaded, and there's a link to the other more popular version on the website as well.
Yeah, and I would like to invite the audience to definitely check out the academic one, because you go really deep into this word Genesis that we kind of glossed over briefly, but you have a pretty thoroughgoing argument for why you think Hippolytus meant conception and not birth. and you cross-reference it with other early Christian writers who use that word to refer specifically to conception, and including non-Christians too, right? Like Galen, the physician?
Correct, yeah, correct. And that was something that I was able to do with the Thesaurus Linguae Graecae database. It's this database of Greek words, so you can do extensive searches on it. And one thing I want to underscore is that even if I am incorrect and that Genesis refers to birth, the calculation theory in many senses still stands, because it shows that Christians are eager to pinpoint the beginning of Jesus's life on the Passover or vernal equinox or both, and that this sort of thought process, this was the engine to, so to speak, begetting all these other dates. And some of them thought, well, it's the birth of Jesus on the Passover. Some thought it's the conception of Jesus on the Passover. And you can see how the date of December 25th could very easily flow from these assumptions.
Yeah, and how often March 25th comes up? It seems like March 25th comes up several times, either for births or deaths or creations of the universes, and the perfect calculation, the perfect 9 months forward, just implicates December.
Exactly. If you look at, you can do a comprehensive census of when early Christians thought Jesus was crucified, and they almost always, we have dozens of examples of this, they almost always say March 25th. The vernal equinox is when he was crucified, or they will say, no, March 25th is when he was resurrected. And it's one of those two dates that they almost always choose. And you add in another assumption where they thought that Jesus was exactly, 30 or 31 or 33 years old, exactly to the day. In other words, he was crucified on his birthday, or at least on the date of his conception. That's another assumption that's baked in that matches these other calculations. So it's other avenues that Christians took, but it's still the similar thought processes involving chronology.
Yeah. Now, has there been significant pushback to this theory from your experience? I know there's been several major articles, yourself included, over the last 10 or 15 years, really. But I would say laying out this theory very clearly. I'm thoroughly convinced as a fellow scholar of early Christianity, but a few of these things do require assumptions. Like from my understanding, there's not an explicit, I think St. Augustine actually explicitly says there's a perfect life when he was born and crucified the same day, or conceived and crucified the same day. But there's a Talmudic reference to prophets like Moses being born and died the same day, and that's kind of a stretch to say that Talmudic idea from, let's say, 500 CE is somehow influencing Hippolytus in 200 CE. So there are assumptions here and there, and I could see how someone might leverage that against the calculation theory.
There are a lot of assumptions. The problem is with either any theory, there's all these assumptions. With the history of religions theory that says that Christians sort of borrowed from Sol Invictus, there's also assumptions. We don't really have evidence, explicitly stating this. We have to sort of read in between the lines. So you get assumptions either way. What we do know for certain is that Hippolytus did think the Genesis of Christ was on the Passover, whatever Genesis means. And he thought Jesus was crucified on the Passover. And that's inscribed in stone in Rome in 222 AD. Julius Africanus says the same thing. He has the resurrection on the 25th of March and the sarcosis, the enfleshment or the incarnation on the 25th of March. So that's all, that's 221 AD, Hippolytus is 222. So it's there, we know it's there. There are some other assumptions that are also baked in there. So this is simply just the most probable hypothesis that I think we can come up with, which I agree with. I'm certain of it. You mentioned other scholars and what other scholars have been saying. Another leading scholar is Philip Nothaft, and he's also published articles. He's an excellent, excellent scholar. And I hesitate to say he agrees with me. It might be more accurate to say I agree with him, because he published some things before. He has focused on similar ideas. And he appears convinced about why December 25th was first chosen. As to why that date was then broadly accepted, He might lean a little more into the idea that Sol Invictus celebrations had something to do with that. But in terms of why December 25th was originally selected, he seems to be 100% calculation theorist, that these are from calculations Hippolytus and others are doing. And then another scholar that your viewers might want to reference is Steve Hymans, H-I-J-M-A-N-S. He's a scholar of Sol Invictus, of the sun god worship in the ancient Roman Empire. And he was the one who sort of started this about, I think, 20 years ago, where he did a dissertation and he realized that there actually is no evidence, explicit evidence before Julian the Apostate and maybe the chronography of 354, that there was a festival of the sun god on December 25th. And he goes through coins. It's fascinating. Coin evidence, numismatic evidence, inscriptions, and literary evidence. So those two guys agree. I haven't seen much formal pushback to the idea. Whenever I hear about it, the criticisms are usually along the lines of, you know, this calculation theory is if I can be blunt, is just kind of absurd. You know, who would? There's no way they selected the birth of Jesus based on this theory. My response to that is, well, it's not a question of whether it's absurd or not. It's a question of whether they believed it. I think they did. They did believe these things. And I think there's ample evidence for that. So in a sense, you can believe that it takes, you know, one scholar said breathtaking mental acrobatics. And yeah, sure, you can take that point of view, but that doesn't mean it's not what they thought.
Yeah. And I think it's no theft. Maybe it was you, but someone said, like, let's call it the contrivances theory and not the calculation theory. Because, yeah, I would 100% say guys like Hippolytus were like trying to force the evidence to match these two cosmic signposts of the equinox and the solstice. Like, if you want to say the universe was created on that day and Jesus was crucified on that day and conceived on that day, like, it's too convenient. They're forcing the evidence. So yeah, let's say contrivances theory if we want to be a little mean about it. So I think that's someone calling it absurd, you could just be like, yep, I think it is a little bit absurd, but apparently they believed it.
I agree.
And I do want to, Dr. Hymans, right, who wrote the Sol Invictus book. That book was critical to my Sol Invictus video. And I just want to reiterate, he goes really deep in the history of the sun god worship in the Roman Empire and really demonstrates how minor the god is in the early Roman Empire. The various sun god festivals that were celebrated, there were several. I believe there was one in August, there was one in October, and it seems like they were the more major ones for this minor god in the early centuries of the Roman Empire. And then suddenly December 25th seems to have entered the scene, possibly in the late 3rd century. And for me, that was pretty convincing too, that the sun god might not have had much to do with this. I'd be curious to see what Notheft says. I could see a theory where it might have helped amplify it throughout the 300s. If you have people celebrating this date, let's say in 340 CE in Eastern Mediterranean, and like, oh, okay, I guess I'll continue celebrating December 25th. But it doesn't seem to have been a factor on settling on the date itself for Jesus, because that predates the big moment of the sun god.
Yeah. And Andrew, perhaps I could say a few words about other Roman holidays that sometimes are pegged with being the impetus for selecting the birth of Jesus on December 25th. So holidays like Saturnalia or the Calends holiday or Brumalia, that's another one. Sol Invictus is, of course, the one we've been talking about. But usually you hear Saturnalia is the holiday that was drawn from. And Saturnalia is this feast. It's this, you know, time of jollification and merriment and gift giving and things like that. It looks like a really great candidate for being the progenitor of the Christian holiday of Christmas. The problem with this is that it wasn't celebrated on December 25th. It was celebrated on December 17th. And then there were times in Roman history where it went several days forward and then sometimes where it went all the way to the 23rd, but it never seems to have actually hit December 25th. And that's true for there's another holiday, Sigillaria, that I think was the final day of Saturnalia. So again, the 23rd or 22nd, depending on, you know, which phase of Roman history you're talking about. So those dates, you know, in terms of actually matching the date, don't. Other possibilities, the Calends. Calends is another holiday in the Roman Empire, but it's in January. It's early January. It's to mark the it's to mark the new year. And it was originally a civic holiday. It wasn't really like a religious holiday, so to speak, but that date doesn't really match. One date that does match is Bruma or Brumalia, and that marked the Roman winter solstice, which was December 25th, which was not actually the winter solstice, astronomically speaking, but it was in their calendar. And this one does match in terms of dates. And we do know that it was a holiday. It was a religious holiday. The issue with that, though, is that originally it seems to have just been a astronomical marker. It takes a long time for it to become a religious holiday for Greco-Roman, you know, followers of Greco-Roman polytheism. And in fact, there's this chronographer, John the Lydian, who's writing in the 500s, and he's talking about Roman calendrical dates and holidays and things. And he talks about Brumalia, and he says, actually, it's only recently come in that people are celebrating this. And he's saying that in the 500s. So it seems like the best date is Sol Invictus. That's the best possible date, like the history of religions theory says. But as we've talked about in our time together, that still doesn't, it doesn't match up with what we're seeing with why December 25th was chosen originally as the birth of Jesus.
Right. So Hippolytus still predates our data about Brumalia.
Yes. Now, he doesn't predate the term Brumalia as referring to just an astronomical event of the solstice. But he does predate what seems to be the sort of religious festivities associated with that.
Well, Dr. Schmidt, this was an absolutely fascinating journey through the calculation theory. Thank you so much for joining us.
Andrew, may I be so bold to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too. Take care.
Thanks so much for watching, and huge thanks again to Dr. Schmidt for joining. If you want to support Religion for Breakfast, Patreon is the single most important way to do it. Patreon is the revenue bedrock of Religion for Breakfast, and the 700 or so people who support me on Patreon make up that bedrock. My goal is to keep this channel academically rigorous and academically critical, and that means paying experts. We pay experts for research and fact-checking. We pay editors to cut these episodes into something you actually want to watch. Patreon is what makes that possible, and it keeps this channel stable month to month. Absolutely no pressure, but if you're able to chip in and you see value in Religion for Breakfast, go to patreon.com/religionforbreakfast. The link is pinned in the comments below. Either way, thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.